This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Better Call Paul is a production of Lola Media. Say hi, Lola.
Hey, everyone. This is Paul Sarker from Better Call Paul. Just wanted to remind you that the show is intended for entertainment purposes only and is not legal advice. I am not your lawyer unless we separately agree for me to represent you, and the views expressed by Mesh and me are solely our own. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Better Call Paul, the show where we discuss the legal and business side behind the scenes of Hollywood. I'm your co-host, Paul Sarker.
And I'm your other co-host, Mesh Lakhani. Welcome back. I'm very excited for this one, Paul, because we get to talk about one of my favorite actors of all time, Tom Cruise, the new Top Gun movie.
We're going to be covering it.
Oh, come on, dude. Okay.
No, he's good. He's
Tom Cruise goes down to me as he is Hollywood. Besides Leo, it's Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue that, but we'll get into it for sure. So yeah, another great episode, another week. Thanks to the fans pushing Better Call Paul into the top 30, top 25 now.
Yeah, we hit 24, I think. We're in the top 25. So
yeah,
feeling good. Entertainment news.
We're not stopping there. We're going straight to the top with your support. But yeah, big week. We got the Cannes Film Festival. Upfronts were in New York this week. I didn't actually go to either. I guess I'm not that cool, but I also just had to work until midnight every day.
So, brutal, man.
I mean, it is what it is. And I had a Marvel AMA on, was it Tuesday this week? If you guys had a chance to check it out, it's still up on
Reddit. We'll link it again. I mean, dude, you did a fantastic job. It did really well. I was really happy with that. You should be proud
of
yourself.
Yeah, the fans, I was surprised at how knowledgeable and insightful they were. They had great questions. It was way more sort of in-depth and knowledgeable than I was expecting. Great questions. So love to do that.
It's cool to see that people really were interested in the legal and the contracts and the business side of the stuff that they really love, which is the characters in Marvel and the movies. And they were asking a lot of legal questions, which I thought was awesome to see.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, some of the best questions I couldn't even answer because I was hey, there's really no way to get into this. Although it's not, I tried to answer every question as it came in, but there were some where I was how did you even know that? And no, I can't possibly get into that. But there were others that you can't just write a two or three sentence answer because they really involve a more substantive discussion. And I think, we can go through that and maybe do some episode topics based on the questions that were asked.
Yeah, I definitely think we should do an AMA episode to kind of go through and have you flesh out some of the topics that people were asking about and even tell some of the stories that you were talked about. So I think that should be definitely an episode we do in the next few weeks.
Well, and speaking of, we can, we'll get into our next story, but that's kind of, there's a Netflix angle there. But why don't we start with Warner? Dave Zaslav spoke at the upfronts this week. Basically said, Warner Discovery, we are the fifth broadcast network. We have this incredible reach in the demographic that everyone cares the most about. And we're poised to really dominate with our offerings between Warner Brothers, Discovery, even going to the Turner properties and NBA rights. We got something for everyone. And we're just ready to sort of be lean, mean, and, just a major player in content. He actually, in his speech, he didn't mention anything about streaming, but then the head of their streaming product also gave us a talk and mentioned how they were really excited about unifying HBO Max and Discovery Plus into sort of one mega streaming product.
So just so I understand, when he says fifth broadcaster in the United States, he's not referring to himself as a streaming product. What exactly does he mean there? An NBC or we're going to be the next?
Yeah. I mean, candidly, they're not a broadcast network. So
right.
I don't really know what he meant, but I think what he meant was we would be the fifth. So traditionally, for the longest time, there were three broadcast networks. There's ABC, CBS, NBC. Then about 30 years ago, Rupert Murdoch bought a bunch of stations and branded them Fox Broadcasting. And they got NFL rights to sort of NFL and The Simpsons is basically what put Fox kind of on the map.
Right.
And now there's four major broadcast stations, but there's others. There's CW, My Network.
Sure, sure.
Independent stations. So they don't actually, Discovery Warner Brothers doesn't actually have a broadcast station, although you could, in theory, buy a bunch of stations, create original network programming, license it out to other stations, and have a fifth broadcast player. There's nothing stopping him from doing that, but that's not what they are. They're right. basically just a major player. But if you think about the biggest content companies in linear media, like ABC, Comcast Universal, Viacom, CBS, they all have broadcast networks,
sure.
right? And that's kind of what he's saying, like, we're a peer of them.
One could also see it from like a branding perspective, right? Like, we are Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers is all these things versus you looking at all these things. Like, Discovery is one thing, HBO is one thing. They're saying Warner Brothers, the Warner Brothers family now is like this massive content library of some of the greatest shows ever. Hence why they're also talking about potentially having one streaming product that brings everything under one light, right? Like a Disney Plus has Marvel and Star Wars and The Simpsons and all that under one brand.
Right. I mean, so it's like there's pros and cons, right? So the pro to having one product is that you can sort of streamline your offering. You get all the data in one place. It's easier to sort of market it. It's only one app, one website. So there's probably some cost savings there. And you can, you know, charge more for one product, right? But there's a con. Or there's a pro also to varying what you're offering, which is you appeal to more people, right? So maybe not everyone wants to spend $15, but you can get a bunch of people to spend $5 or $6. And so, you know, Disney, yes, they have Disney Plus, but they also have Hulu and they have ESPN Plus. And what they allow you to sort of pay a lower price for all three if you bundle them. But you could also, if you're just like a sports fan that doesn't really care about Hulu or the Disney legacy, you know, content, then you could just get ESPN Plus. So there's pros and cons, but their view is to really compete in the next iteration of the streaming wars, you have to have a ton of content and be in that 10 to 15. I don't know how much they're going to charge for it, but they think that HBO Max maybe doesn't appeal to everyone and Discovery Plus doesn't maybe appeal to everyone, but together they'll appeal to so many people that when you're talking about people who can only afford two or three, or most people are not going to have 10 streaming services, that the combined service will be on the short list of ones that people opt to have.
Makes sense. And I mean, HBO Max is such a powerhouse. So we'll be curious to see how Discovery Plus does. And I guess, I mean, talking about streaming specifically, Netflix is now talking about live streaming as a way to help with the loss of subscribers, bringing that in as a different potential revenue channel or content channel, and live streaming in the sense of, I guess what they mean is that I could literally put on Netflix and see, hey, it's one of their reality shows, like Love is Blind is doing a live taping of the reunion special or something like that. And you can watch it live on Netflix, or one of their shows has live voting. I believe that Disney Plus actually tested this out with the Academy Award nominations, and they're going to be doing Dancing with the Stars live streaming through Disney Plus. Paul, what is your thoughts on this?
I thought they were going to be like, who do you want to get slapped on the next award show? I'm just kidding. That would be cool. Look, ABC is shifting Dancing with the Stars to Disney Plus.
Right. Live streaming.
Right. Live streaming. This is a very interesting story. And I remember thinking when I was actually at Disney Marvel, you know, when Netflix was ascending and this sort of brand new, completely different business model, industry changing thing. And they were, I wouldn't say hubris, but they were very set in the fact that, like, it's our way. We're not trying to compete with anyone. You know, we have such a better product offering that everyone is going to basically have Netflix, and we're just this rocket ship. We march to the beat of our own drum. And now, you know, 10 years later, whatever it is, it's like, okay, well, now they're going to have ads and also live streaming content. So is this basically the same thing? You know, they just merged back into the lane that they left.
Right.
But that's, you know, I guess that just shows how competitive it is. And if you can't beat them, join them. And I guess they want to have the ability to monetize ads, which was what made linear television. I mean, depends on what side of the fence you're on. I wasn't particularly a fan of having so many ads in linear television. And they're going to incorporate live. Now, they haven't said specific. I mean, the examples that you've cited are true, like voting in awards, maybe some live comedy. But they haven't said the S word, which is sports, which is really, you know, the biggest sort of component of live television.
Totally.
But it is an interesting thing from a rights issue. I mean, if you're licensing content, sometimes you only have SVOD rights. You wouldn't necessarily have live or linear rights. So that, for content that they own and produce on their own, they probably don't have to worry about that. But it's super interesting. And they're not the only ones to do this. Obviously, we just said Disney Plus is getting into live streaming for Dancing with the Stars.
I mean, ESPN Plus has been doing it, right? ESPN's been doing live
streaming. ESPN Plus has live sports. Amazon has had live sports for the past 5 years, and they're getting into NFL exclusively on Thursday nights. So live is a component of a lot of these quote-unquote SVOD platforms, and they're kind of a hybrid. But it's just interesting because this was... Netflix was anti this for so long.
Yeah. Well, I would like to see it like live, like Twitch is live. Like if we were watching the Academy Awards, right, and we were watching it live through a streaming platform and we were able to make comments and just have our usernames on there, imagine that most of us wouldn't be running to Twitter or Instagram or TikTok to see what the hell just happened. We would just be all like talking amongst ourselves on the Netflix platform, which I think could be potentially pretty special if they were thinking about that. Like, are we going to be able to eventually like make it more of like a Twitch experience where people are able to comment and engage with the actual live taping?
I think the future for Better Call Paul too. I mean, we could probably
sure.
do these shows with a live component. People could see, hey, are they really as smart as they sound? How do they answer these questions so fast? But sure.
Yeah, we'll just speak for yourself.
Is it all scripted? I don't know. We're never telling. But yeah, it's going to be exciting. It doesn't sound like they're getting into sports, although that could be really exciting. It would just probably increase the fees for sports because there'd be another bidder in the room. But we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. Last thing I'll say about that is that Netflix, as a joke from a branding standpoint, has always been cool to me. I love what they've done on YouTube. I love what they've done like just on TikTok and stuff. And I mean, I don't know, like, would I watch live performances? I would definitely watch like live, like if Billie Eilish was doing something. I know like Apple's looked at stuff like this. I mean, they've all recorded like, you know, these events with like Adele and like Billie Eilish. And if you're doing something, whether it's awards or musical performances or comedy performances, like there's so much room for it. And I'm sure like the content creators themselves would be really interested in it. So let's see, just another thing for platforms to be competitive on with each other. But let's take a quick break and we'll be back with one of our bigger topics for this week. Sydney Sweeney getting sued by a bikini. Paul, you came up with
for her bikini.
Before her bikini. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Okay, so let me get this right, Paul. Sydney Sweeney getting sued for her bikini.
Right, or you could just drop the her, right? It's a little catchier if you say.
Sydney Sweeney getting sued by bikini.
Sued for bikini. Just that. Just say sued for bikini.
Sydney Sweeney sued for bikini.
Right.
What's
right,
going right. on with Sydney Sweeney? The beloved Sydney Sweeney, or one of the more polarizing characters on Euphoria, a show that I really love, who plays Cassie Howard, is being sued by LA Collective, a swimsuit company or apparel company, for breaking her agreement with the brand. She apparently backed out of her agreement with their Somewhere swimwear that she had signed up for in order to wear and promote, just like an influencer would. She ended up backing out of the deal and then apparently kind of copying similar designs and then wearing them on at least 5 episodes, I believe, of Euphoria. And so now the brand is like, well, we're not profiting off this. This was a deal that would have ended up with $3 million in profit from the influencer deal. So now they're suing her. Paul, what's your thoughts?
Yeah. Listen, I haven't read the complaint. I haven't read her contract. So I would say this is a factual analysis, depending on what her contract says and what they're alleging. But from what you just said and from what I've, you know, read about this that's in the news, it seems like a pretty uphill battle for LA Collective. I mean, I think there's two causes of action here, potentially. One is, as you said, breach of contract. So they hire her to be an influencer. They say, hey, we'll give you some bathing. I don't know what the terms are. Maybe they paid her, gave her some bathing suits, and they said, hey, tweet about it, wear it, you know, whatever. So that's, let's say, claim one. And then claim two would be, hey, she took our designs and wore them in her show without our permission. And that would be, let's say, call it claim two. I think claim one is a straight contract claim. It depends right. what her contract says. If I'm representing an influencer, there's going to be certain provisions in there that basically say that, like, for example, if they thought they were making $3 million in profit, I would say, hey, you know, we're not representing that you're going to get any particular right. amount of profit. We're not, you know, guaranteeing that anyone's going to see, you know, that this is going to appear in Euphoria. You're just giving us the product. And if there's any sort of component of, yeah, we'll tweet about it once or whatever, you know, that's a negotiated thing. But we're not specifying that there's going to be any amount of sales or anything like that, because it's just too hard to predict.
Well, the profits are not her problem, right? They're like, we're going to pay you and we're praying that by you wearing them, we're going to estimate that we make $3 million profit. I don't know how they made that estimate, but that's essentially what they're saying.
So that's the thing that's tricky, right? It's very speculative. And generally speaking, you can't get damages that are speculative. I mean, you can get damages that are sort of foreseeable or the natural consequence of the contract. So for example, if they paid her $500,000 and she didn't do what she was supposed to do, maybe they get the $500,000 back, right? I don't know what they paid her, but you could sue for something like that. But just to say, oh, well, if you marketed this, then we would have sold, you know, 10 million units, and at $3 per unit, we would have made, you know, in profit, then we would, like, that's a little bit speculative. And I doubt that they'll be able to recover for that. I mean, I don't know what the contract says, but typically we try to remove any sort of speculative or consequential damages. It's just as a matter of precedent. We try not to include those sorts of things, but I don't know. It seems very speculative. Maybe they could get back what they paid her if they paid her anything, but lost profits, tough to get. That's an uphill battle.
Then saying that, like, I forget what the word they used was, but it was like the swimsuits kind of looked like a lot of clothes look like a lot of clothes.
So what they said was she approved the designs. So they said she
yes.
was involved in the development of the designs, and then she sort of went AWOL, didn't respond, didn't do anything else. And then a couple weeks or days or whatever later, the designs that she approved or that they supplied ended up in Euphoria. And so right. that's the second claim, which is right. the use of their product in an audiovisual work without their ostensible permission. And that, I also think, is a little bit of an uphill battle. And we've talked about this in other episodes, this concept of, you know, I generally advise clients, if they're making film, TV, audiovisual works, or whatever, audio works, podcasts, generally it's better to be in the habit of clearing any third-party trademarks, brands, logos that appear. Although, and this is not legal advice, it's not always required for you to have permission. There's certain circumstances where it's okay. It's not a violation. Like if you depict things incidentally in a way that isn't necessarily diminishing their brand or portraying them in a negative way, and it's kind of like, you know, not featured those things and intended and used in a way that they're intended to be used, then it's kind of hard for the brand or trademark owner to make a claim. So in this case, for example, you know, it's kind of sunny, it's hot in New York today. If I drank a Gatorade in the middle of this episode, right, because I just happen to have a Gatorade sitting off to the side, that would be okay, right? We're not featuring it necessarily. And so if she's wearing a bathing suit and, you know, no one can tell what the brand is, then it's tough to say that there's damages or a trademark sort of infringement there. But to avoid the risk and the uncertainty of a claim and getting the legal letter and, you know, then your production legal has to worry about it, I recommend people just get permission in advance, even though it's not always required. It's just a better sort of practice to be in. The other thing is this could be an issue for HBO Max, right? Because technically they're the ones that released the show, and their clearance department should be the ones making sure that all the wardrobe and things are cleared.
Right, but on the wardrobe side, it's like they clearly have someone who works wardrobe on set. They pick out stuff for the people on the show, and I would assume they have some type of approval process, right? Like you can't just show up in your own clothes and then go on camera.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would assume so too. And, you know, it's possible that Sydney would have said, hey, I really want to wear these, right? Because maybe she has some sort of side deal with, she had a deal with LA Collective, so maybe she went to the people, you know, the wardrobe costume people at Euphoria and said, hey, I really want to wear these. And they were like, okay, cool. They look fine to us. In which case, you know, that's the artist going to the network and saying, I want to include these products. And then she would have to represent that she had the right to incorporate them, right? So I don't know if she papered it or her reps haven't commented.
Yeah.
But it's just generally speaking, it doesn't sound like from at least what's publicly in the trades that she has a lot to worry about in this. I mean, it really does depend on what her contract says, but just wearing the bathing suits in Euphoria without sort of featuring them or portraying them negatively, it's probably not much of a claim.
Yeah, I mean, and it's summed up. I mean, it's, look, it's one of the hottest shows of the year. I mean, I've watched both seasons. It's an intense show to watch. These women have become like, you know, massive celebrities and like style icons. And it's funny because like you do notice like the swimsuits, the certain style around them, like, and the style of like the filmmaking part, you do notice them. I'm not saying you notice them from a standpoint of like, oh, check out a woman in a bikini. It's like you do notice something special about the clothes on the show. Like everyone is dressed to the max. There's a certain style to it. And this show is one of those shows where like it matters if your stuff is featured. I'm sure people are going crazy. I actually like read this thing where it said Sweeney wore the pink Frankie's bikini suit on season 2 and it racked up a 500 person waiting list in 24 hours. So I guess on one of the episodes she wore another company's bikini and like people went nuts for it. I mean, 500 people, is that, I mean, when you're watching a show that has millions of people watching, I mean, think about having 500 people in a line in New York outside a store.
Right.
It's a lot of people.
Right. Like every, you know, Supreme drop has like.
Yeah.
But I would suspect, so in the normal context, right, if I were representing the HBO Max or whoever, if a brand's going to donate product for use in the show and you're going to agree to include it, that's pretty much the deal, right? You're taking the product, giving it a ton of exposure in your show. I wouldn't necessarily guarantee it's going to appear on screen, but, you know, reasonable efforts or whatever. And then at the end, in the credits, you say, you know, swimwear donated by LA Collective or whoever. And that's kind of the way these deals work. So, you know, if LA Collective got featured in this show that they normally would have had to pay for that kind of exposure and then they got it anyway, it's like, yeah, okay, well, what are your damages? Are your damages that you didn't sell enough bathing suits? Because is that her fault? I don't know what the contract says.
Sure.
But the case seems a little thin to me.
Well, now, and you know, again, they're now in the news about it. So if people are reading about it, they're like, oh, let me go check out these swimsuits. So, I mean.
Right. And to be clear, it's Sydney Sweeney that people are clicking about. It's not like, you know, like, right. But whatever. I mean.
Yeah. Well, anyways.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. But let's take a quick break and then we'll be back for the main event, Mr. Tom Cruise. All right, Paul, I'm very excited for this. We're talking about Tom Cruise, the new Top Gun movie, Top Gun Maverick, and how Tom doesn't want this movie on streaming platforms. He's going to bring the box office back post-pandemic. This guy has got a nail biter, popcorn feeder. I mean, we're talking, some people said this is the best action movie of the last 20 years. Tom Cruise, man.
No way.
That's what someone, look, someone said it. I'm not saying it, but I would say that Tom Cruise at least has what? Let's call it 10 of the best action movies in the last 20 years. That could be a legitimate statement.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we're not, I don't think, how does he look so young? I mean, it's been like how many years? Almost 25 years since the first Top Gun. And he's like, flying planes. I mean, that's amazing.
This dude is like, he looks good.
Ageless.
He still runs his ass off. Best runner in the business. He's still doing his own stunts. I mean, he's got another Mission Impossible movie coming out. I mean, this guy is just like, he's freaking unstoppable. I only think he's done, I think Tom Cruise has only done 2 bad movies that I've personally watched. And they weren't even that bad.
Exactly. I mean, the floor is really low. Tom Cruise is excellent. We can do our top. Do you want to do that right now, or do you want to?
Well, yeah. Before we get into our top, let's. He was at Cannes. Is it Cannes or Cannes?
Cannes. Oh. The S is silent.
Cannes. So he was like, Jesus. I just sounded like such a like.
I know. Dude, you have an entertainment news podcast.
So it's funny, there's an Entourage episode where they argue about the pronunciation of Khan and Khan. Anyway, so it's Khan. Khan, this movie's being talked about, like, rave reviews, action movie, a lot of live action, so a lot of less CGI. It originally was supposed to come out on June 24, 2020, and obviously this is the sequel to the 1986 Top Gun movie with Tom Cruise, with Val Kilmer. That was a massive hit back in the 80s. And Paul, it's been cool because Tom Cruise has been on this like press tour and people have asked him, like, what do you think about streaming? And he said, that's not going to happen ever in regards to debuting a movie on streaming.
Right. Yeah.
And he says, he wants to be there for movie theater owners. And he's like, I've got Top Gun and Mission Impossible coming out. He was speaking specifically to the owners. I know what your struggles, man. And I'm making sure that these movies don't come out debut. I mean, he's got like, you know, look, this might be one of the bigger box office numbers of the weekend. And Mission Impossible right after that. I mean, it's kind of cool. Like he's going for the, hey, we want to keep people in business. We want to keep this whole in the movie theater thing alive. So you got to give it to him.
Yeah. I mean, listen. No question about it. So it might not be entirely altruistic. He may not be doing it solely for the people that make the popcorn because he also probably sure. has a pretty sure. big back end
sure.
and would have been, maybe in a Scarlet situation if it went straight to Paramount Plus or whatever. But the idea...
He's a saint, Paul.
I mean, he's got a lot of leverage. He's one of the biggest movie stars. He's got a super talented lawyer who is 93 years old and still practicing.
His lawyer?
Burt Fields, yeah. He's like one of the lawyers to the stars. Represents Tom Cruise and James Cameron and Dustin Hoffman, a handful of others.
Oh, man. What a killer.
He's still going, man. But yeah, so this is... We talk about this, or actually, I don't know that we ever did an episode about this. So you know Scarlett sued Disney
yeah.
for Black Widow yeah. being released in Disney Plus and theaters at the same time. And normally, a studio is going to say, okay, we're hiring you for a TV show or we're hiring you for a movie, but you don't have any ability to dictate how or when we're going to release it or in what form. But that studio clearly hasn't met Tom Cruise because his contract probably says something along the lines of, you know, exclusive, wide theatrical release or something like that. So for him to give such a confident answer, like, no way in a million years were we going to release this debut on streaming, I think that's because he knew that contractually he had the right to block that.
I mean, and you're right. Like the dude, his movies have made, Tom Cruise's movies have made $4 billion in the U.S. I mean, that's a lot.
And for not having done a Marvel movie, that's pretty impressive, right?
Dude, it's this not guy.
Like he's in Endgame.
He is the what? He is the missing character from the Marvel movies. And watch this guy show up at some time being just a hell of a villain. But you know, the guy, to your point, has the leverage. Like, this guy opens, like, his... And when you think about Tom Cruise, like, you think about all the amazing movies he made in the 80s, the 90s, and then you think about the, like, early aughts, and then you think about the last 10 years, and you're like, just, like, the Mission Impossible franchise is, like, the better version of the Fast franchise. You know, the movies...
I think this is public knowledge. If it's not, we're going to have to cut it. Tom Cruise was supposed to be Tony Stark.
I've seen that thing.
He wanted too much money, and Marvel was like, hey, this RDJ is super talented. He's just getting out of rehab. Let's give him his shot. And so he was in talks to be the sort of foundational star of the MCU. But
interesting.
Yeah, so it's crazy, right? Like, imagine if he had been Iron Man. You know, at the end of the day, they're all making a ton of money anyway, whether you're Robert or Tom. But
yeah, and look. I mean, he's done an incredible job with the Mission Impossible franchise. And, you know, I think all of them are good besides everyone knows the one that wasn't. Unless, you know, I'm sure there are people out there that it was their favorite, but everyone knows that number two is like, you know, not really a movie, right?
I've actually not seen any of the Mission Impossible movies.
Are you kidding me?
No, I have not seen.
You've never seen like the first one?
I haven't seen any of the Mission Impossible franchise.
Are you? Okay. We should probably go into our top 10, but I mean, but the fact that you have not.
It feels good to sort of say that publicly. I have not seen a Mission Impossible movie.
I don't know why you should feel good about it. It's Tom Cruise.
Because I've been sort of burying that. It just, you know, I can fix it. It's something I can remedy, but I've just, you know.
Is it just never interested you?
I have a top 10. I like Tom Cruise as an actor. I have a top 10.
No. Has the Mission Impossible movies not interested you?
I mean, it's just they haven't been enough. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm a busy guy and I watch other action movies. If they have comic book stars, then sure. Otherwise, it's tougher.
Huh.
You know, like...
Fair enough.
We'll see. I mean, listen, we're going to get into our top 10. I think when I was making this list, I thought it was really shocking that I... It's not like I consciously didn't want to see a Mission Impossible flick. it just never happened.
Okay, let's get into our top 10. The only thing I would say is you don't have to watch any Mission Impossible movie besides the first one, given that it came out when we were probably in like elementary or middle school. And to me, it's still one of the best spy movies of this day.
Top 10.
You want to kick it off with your top 10?
Okay. This is in a kind of a particular order, but he had so many good movies, it's hard to choose. I'm going to go with Rain Man as number one. I watched it as a kid with my folks. Dustin Hoffman, Tom Cruise, the younger brother, sort of like that whole dynamic. I thought it was great. Last Samurai, number two. I really like, I mean.
It was a good movie.
Yeah, you know, whatever.
Sure, totally.
Last Samurai, A Few Good Men, Minority Report.
Hell yeah.
Edge of Tomorrow, which I think is also Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah.
American Made.
That was really good. Sleeper.
Jerry Maguire, which kind of inspired me to become an entertainment lawyer in the first place. Tropic Thunder, which I know he was not featured, but he still had a pretty significant role.
Yeah.
The Firm, which also Tom Cruise is a good lawyer, and The Color of Money would be last, which is a very early Tom Cruise role.
I mean, there's so many. Yeah, I don't know. I think I get confused between The Color of Money and Cocktail. One is about pool, one is about him being a bartender, right?
Right, yeah. Cocktail is a bartender.
I get confused between the two. I don't know if I've seen The Color of Money, but I've seen Cocktail.
Well, Paul Newman. I mean, it's Paul Newman's movie, but he's, you know.
Right. So I love your list. You got a fantastic list there. I was missing one, so I took one of yours that I forgot that I actually did like, and I'll tell you which one it was. But for the same reasons where I'm kind of like eye roll about it, but it's also like this movie was pretty fucking good. So Mission Impossible 1. Mission Impossible 1 for me just kicked off. Like I was like in fifth. Like, it was right around the time that Independence Day and everything came out. We're probably talking like 95, 96, like one of the coolest years ever for music and for film. I remember where I was. I was with my mom and her friend and we went and watched it in London. And I remember being like, who is this guy? This guy is so freaking cool.
Okay, I got to watch it.
And it's in like, look, Mission Impossible 1, they didn't make a sequel for like way later. So think about it as like a standalone movie that was just like an ode to the series. So highly recommend it. I've got Jerry, in no particular order, I got Jerry Maguire, classic, The Firm, A Few Good Men, Rain Man, Edge of Tomorrow, which was such a sleeper hit that I think is on most people's lists because it's so freaking good. It shows his action and comedy chops. Emily Blunt is great in it. This is where it gets a little embarrassing. I've got Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which was fantastic. That was the one where they introduced, I forget her name. She's the British actress who's in Dune, the mother.
Okay. I think she's Scottish.
Yeah. Okay. She's Scottish, but she was introduced in Rogue Nation. She's amazing in it. And Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. The only reason I like that, I like the whole Dubai scene. It's a classic, the Burj Khalifa climb. I think part of the reason why I love these movies is that this guy just wows you with his stunts and he's doing the stunts. And so you're just kind
of
like...
Three of your top 10 are Mission Impossible or do you have more?
three of my top 10 are Mission Impossible.
Okay.
And then I got Minority Report, amazing. Vanilla Sky, which I love Vanilla Sky. Yeah. Different side of Tom Cruise. Last Samurai, I just took yours. His hair looks amazing in it. And like, there's still so many movies that I would list off of his.
I know.
Are fantastic. That's the crazy thing about this guy.
Yeah. I mean we'd love to have him. We'd love to have him on a show.
I mean, this guy, it's so funny when people mention Tom Cruise around me. I'm like, I will go watch any Tom Cruise movie in theaters. I'm there. I'm watching Top Gun.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, look, I'm glad that we're both Tom Cruise fans. I love your top 10. Can't wait for you to watch Mission Impossible 1. And then we'll go watch the new Mission Impossible when it comes out in theaters together, making a night out. You'll have plenty of time to catch up on the last ones. But I'm excited about Top Gun, man. And this was a fun one. This was a fun episode.
Yeah, this is fun.
Make sure you're subscribed to us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you choose to listen. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Mesh Lakhani. Feel free to ask us any questions there.
And on Instagram, it's Better Call Paul the Podcast.
This episode is edited and produced by Valentino Rivera, Marco Seiler Gonzalez, with assistant producer Justin Sanchez and assistant research producer Haas Nasser.
Thanks a lot, everyone.
Until next time.
We'll see you next week.